the government did not produce, despite its best efforts, any evidence that Manning knew that Al-Qaeda would be seeing and accessing this information.
They are ready to apply this law to anyone, including those people who will come to participate in the Olympic Games. They're continuing to firmly insist that these laws has credibility and that they will be used during the Olympic Games in case someone breaches the law.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. The new Pope says he won't judge gay priests. A U.S. Army judge measures Bradley Manning's guilt. And Vladimir Putin plays Russian roulette with the Winter Olympics. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Pamela Brooks.
And I'm Charlie Bauer.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending August 3rd, 2013. Russia's escalating war on gay people and global reaction to it continued to top LGBT news this week. The International Olympic Committee announced last week that the Russian government had given assurances that visiting lesbian and gay competitors and spectators at the 2014 Winter Olympics in the Russian town of Sochi would not be prosecuted under a new national law that criminalizes promotion of non-traditional sexual relations. But statements early this week by Russian government officials directly contradicted those assurances. Legislator Vitaly Milonov is a member of Vladimir Putin's United Russia Party and co-sponsor of the so-called No Promo Homo Bill. He told Interfax that if a law has been approved by the federal legislature and signed by the president, then the government has no right to suspend it. It doesn't have the authority. He insisted that the measure defends children from the propaganda of non-traditional values and has nothing to do with what he called the ordinary life of adults.
Russian sports minister Vitaly Mutko confirmed later in the week that athletes and visitors to the Sochi Olympics would be subject to the country's law against promoting homosexuality. He told the state news agency R Sport that no one is forbidding an athlete with non-traditional sexual orientation from coming to Sochi, but if he goes onto the street and starts propagandizing it, then of course he will be held accountable. Interfax reported that Igor Anansik, the chairman of the Committee on Physical Culture, Sport and Youth Affairs in the State Duma, the lower house of Russia's legislature, had also endorsed that position.
But by week's end, mixed signals were again being sent. Anansky told Interfax that the Olympic Games is a major international event. We need to be as polite and tolerant as possible. That is why a decision has been made not to raise this issue during the Olympics. It remains to be seen just exactly what that means.
Russian citizens can be heavily fined and even jailed for violating the anti-propaganda law. Foreigners can be fined, jailed for up to 15 days, and deported. The Kremlin has pursued an increasingly conservative agenda since Vladimir Putin's return to the presidency last year, aligning its politics with the Russian Orthodox Church. In addition to the No Promo Homo law, Putin's government has passed bills banning the adoption of Russian children by couples in countries with marriage equality and making blasphemy a crime.
Debate continues among the world's LGBT activists and their allies about the proper response to the deteriorating situation for sexual minorities in Russia. Some have called for a boycott of the Sochi Winter Olympics, but the prevailing opinion seems to be that it's better to be there and make a statement than to sit at home in silence. In fact, the old ACT UP, Silence Equals Death banner was raised at a ceremonial dumping of Russian vodka in the streets of New York City this week, a protest movement spreading among activists and owners of gay night spots around the world that specifically targets Stolichnaya or Stoli, which is arguably the most popular brand of Russian vodka in the West. Activists did the same thing later in the week in ecologically conscious West Hollywood, where the liquid in the Stoli bottles was actually water. Canadian and UK gay activists and night spots are reportedly also jumping on the Dump Stoli bandwagon.
But in a queer twist, Latvia's leading LGBT advocacy group, Mosaika, claimed in a media release that Stoli is actually made in their country's capital city of Riga, not Russia, and asked activists to call off their campaign against the vodka brand. But an open letter to Mosaika from the US-based group Queer Nation noted that all of the initial processing of the vodka is done in Russia. Only the final step occurs in Latvia. As the brand has gone global and its Russian identity has become an inconvenience in some markets, for the SPI group, which owns the Stolichnaya brand, the company has altered its marketing and labeling. But we do not mistake marketing for facts.
In other news, Roman Catholic Pope Francis made headlines this week in response to a question about gay priests during an impromptu conversation with reporters aboard the plane taking him back to the Vatican from his highly successful visit to Brazil. "If someone is gay and seeks the Lord with goodwill, who am I to judge?" he said. "I have not seen anyone at the Vatican who is registered as gay on his identity card." "We acknowledge that there are gays," he continued. "Nevertheless, the Catechism of the Catholic Church says clearly that we must not marginalize these people. They are our brothers." He also said women should be given a bigger role in the church, but refused to consider their ordination, saying the door is closed on that issue. Several organizations representing both LGBT people and Roman Catholics around the world applauded the Pope's statements as signaling a more tolerant and accepting tone for the church. An LGBT Catholic organization called Equally Blessed said in a statement that bishops who oppose the expansion of basic civil rights, such as an end to discrimination in the workplace, can no longer claim that the Pope approves of their discriminatory agenda. But critics said the statements by Francis are just more business-as-usual platitudes about loving the sinner but hating the sin. They may be a step up from his predecessor, Pope Benedict XVI, who called homosexuality intrinsically disordered, and repeatedly railed against the legal recognition of same-gender couples. But, they point out, the church still considers homosexual acts to be a mortal sin and requires gay and lesbian Catholics to remain celibate.
U.S. Army Private First Class Bradley Manning, who's been described as either gay or transgendered, was convicted this week of releasing thousands of classified government documents to WikiLeaks in what's been called the largest national security breach in American history. Colonel Denise Lind, who presided at Manning's court-martial in Fort Meade, Maryland, acquitted him of the most serious charge, aiding the enemy, that would have brought a life sentence or even execution. She still found him guilty on all the other charges, including espionage, though some say that seems to contradict the aiding the enemy acquittal. Among the more horrific acts that Manning exposed was a video showing a U.S. helicopter crew gunning down a dozen unarmed Iraqis in Baghdad in 2007. The victims included a photographer and a driver working for the Reuters news agency. Manning was 22 years old when he was arrested 3 years ago, and he's been behind bars ever since, the first year reportedly in solitary confinement. His attorney argued that the young intelligence analyst was disillusioned by American policy in Iraq and portrayed Manning as a naive but well-intentioned whistleblower. Manning already pleaded guilty to 10 lesser charges that could keep him in the military brig for up to 20 more years with a dishonorable discharge. The sentencing phase following this week's convictions began on July 31st.
In the latest impact of the U.S. Supreme Court's DOMA ruling, Secretary of State John Kerry announced during a speech at the U.S. Embassy in London on August 2nd that, effective immediately, the visa applications of same-gender married couples will be treated just like applications from opposite-gender spouses. According to a State Department media release quoting Kerry, "If you are the spouse of a U.S. citizen, your visa application will be treated equally. And if you are in a country that doesn't recognize your same-sex marriage," he continued, "your visa application will still be treated equally at every single one of our 222 visa processing centers around the world.
And finally, Minnesota and Rhode Island officially became the latest U.S. states with marriage equality this week. Minnesota Governor Mark Dayton signed legislation opening civil marriage to lesbian and gay couples in mid-May, not too long after Rhode Island Governor Lincoln Chafee did the same. Each bill became law at midnight on August 1st. The first same-gender couple to be married under the new Minnesota law, Kathy Ten Broeck and Margaret Miles, did so at Minneapolis City Hall early in the morning on the 1st. Mayor R.T. Ryback officiated, with the couple's 5-year-old son looking on. Ten Broek said afterward that, "I didn't expect to cry quite that hard." The mayor went on to marry several other same-gender couples. Other ceremonies began at the stroke of midnight on August the 1st in other cities across the state, including St. Paul. A wedding was even scheduled for 12:01 a.m. in the Chapel of Love at the world-famous Mall of America.
Democratic Rhode Island State Representative Frank Ferry and his husband, Tony Caparco, got hitched in Vancouver in 2006. But they were married again in Ferry's Warwick district on August 1st by out House Speaker Gordon Fox, who had championed the state's marriage equality legislation. Federico Santi and John Gosher are a couple in Newport, Rhode Island. They've been together since 1972 and were previously joined in a civil union, so they were immediately wed after being among the first to get a marriage license in Newport on August 1st. City Clerk Kathleen Sylvia, who issued the license and has known Santi for 28 years, called it a day of smooching in Rhode Island. 13 U.S. states and the District of Columbia now offer civil marriage to same-gender couples.
That's News Wrap for the week ending August 3rd, 2013. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and produced by Steve Pride.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. I'm Pamela Brooks.
And I'm Charlie Bauer.
What's the best response to Vladimir Putin's crackdown on gays and lesbians? We'll hear from a prominent Russian activist later in the program. Whistleblowing Army Private Bradley Manning, variously described as gay or transgendered, was found not guilty of aiding the enemy at his U.S. military trial this week, but he was convicted of 20 lesser but still serious charges, including violations of the Espionage Act. What's next for the soldier at the center of the controversy? Dorian Marina of Free Speech Radio News asked Elizabeth Goitein, director of the Liberty and National Security Program at the Brennan Center for Justice.
Military Judge Lynn said that Manning faces up to 136 years in prison on the 20 charges. What do government prosecutors need to prove in this phase of the sentencing?
Well, things get a little tougher for them now because the factors that are relevant at the sentencing hearing are some of the factors that were considered by the judge not to be relevant at the guilt phase, including Bradley Manning's motive and whether or not his disclosures caused serious harm. And these issues are issues that actually are not as easy for the government as some of the issues about whether or not Bradley Manning actually accessed and disclosed these documents. So it's going to be a tougher road for them to hoe, I think.
So his motivations and also whether or not the leaks caused harm. Manning was acquitted of the aiding the enemy charge. Government prosecutors claimed in that charge that he had knowingly given intelligence to the enemy through WikiLeaks. That was not proven. Does that acquittal change how the sentencing will take place or what the burden of proof will be?
Well, that's interesting. It really doesn't in theory, because in theory, the sentencing hearing will only address, you know, the harm and the motive on those particular charges for which he was acquitted. But certainly the fact that the government did not produce, despite its best efforts, any evidence that Manning knew that Al-Qaeda would be seeing and accessing this information, that right there does say something about what the government will be able to prove about his motive. So in practice, yes, I think the acquittal does tell us something about, how these factors will play out at the sentencing phase.
Now, to go to that question of harm and to provide some context about some of the information that Manning leaked, he disclosed hundreds of thousands of documents. They included a video of a 2007 helicopter attack that shows U.S. soldiers firing on unarmed civilians and children in Baghdad. There were incident reports in Afghanistan that revealed a U.S.-run assassination squad. Then there were the diplomatic cables that showed the U.S. spied on U.N. officials, that the FBI trained Egypt's security forces that then committed torture, and that the administrations of both Bush and Obama thwarted international attempts to investigate torture. Much of these details were not known before the leak. What is in this information that the government is pointing to that would put U.S. national security at risk?
That's a good question. There were original classification authorities who testified at the hearing and spoke about their decisions or the reasons why the information was classified and why it could harm national security. You know, risk to national security is often very much in the eye of the beholder. It's often a subjective judgment. It's not hard to imagine national security consequences to almost anything if you get creative enough.
Well, in all this information, could the government point to information leaked on dissidents or on confidential government sources around the world?
Yeah, absolutely, for sure. And I do think, I mean, it's important to point out many of the categories of documents that you were talking about, things like unreported civilian deaths. I actually don't think that's a national security issue. I think that it probably should not have been classified. And I think it's actually beneficial to have that information out there to inform the public debate. But that said, you know, Manning did release documents that included names of confidential sources, including Afghan, you know, villagers who were cooperating with American forces. And those, in my mind, those were irresponsible disclosures, and those could have harmed those people's safety. Now, it's not clear to me that it could have harmed national security, but certainly it could have harmed their safety, and that information should not have been disclosed.
Manning was found guilty of 5 Espionage Act offenses. The Center for Constitutional Rights has called that act a discredited relic of the World War I era, created as a tool to suppress political dissent and anti-war activism. How could this conviction affect cases brought against other people who leak information, such as Edward Snowden, the NSA contractor who revealed extensive surveillance of Americans, or others?
Well, unfortunately, this discredited relic appears to be enjoying a bit of a renaissance. It's being used far more commonly than it's ever been used before in cases involving disclosures of classified information to the media. And in fact, it really was never used that way, or exceedingly rarely used that way, up until I believe it was used for the 1970s, and maybe a total of 3 times before this administration. And now we've seen 7 Espionage Act prosecutions for disclosures of classified information to the media. And each ruling in one of those cases sets a precedent, because there are so few cases in the past to rely on. So these convictions, if they stand on appeal, will set a precedent for the next, make it easier to bring the next Espionage Act case against a national security leaker, even if that leaker is a whistleblower and is simply bringing to light government misconduct that never should have been classified in the first place.
Elizabeth Goitein of the Liberty and National Security Program at the Brennan Center for Justice spoke with Dorian Marina of Free Speech Radio News.
Follow your favorite international LGBT radio show on Twitter at TWO Radio. Read our blog at twopodcast.blogspot.com. And check out our fan page at facebook.com/thiswayoutradio. There are also links to all 3 at thiswayout.org.
Are you boycotting Russian vodka? Are you canceling plans to attend the Winter Olympics in Sochi? Or do you think those are bad ideas? Activists around the world are arguing about the correct strategy to take against the country's new so-called homosexual propaganda law and other horrifying developments in the crackdown on LGBT people there. This Way Out, Steve Pride contacted leading Russian activist Nikolai Alexeyev via Skype to get his take on this dangerous and complex situation.
I think that the world boycotts, they really attract some attention to all these violations of human rights in Russia. And the more such things happen, the more Russian authorities will be anxious about the consequences of their policy. So I think that these boycotts work when they're multiple in many different locations and many different countries. It shows just that Russia is very isolated in the civilized world by passing such laws and by discriminating sexual minorities. But I think we should pressure the governments of Western countries to put more pressure on the Russian government in terms of this homophobic policy. Of course, the forthcoming Olympic Games in Sochi in February next year, it's a very good opportunity to pressure Russian government even more, to shame them for their policy, for their violations on the fundamental rights.
So you think we should concentrate on the Olympics rather than vodka?
The commercial company, especially Stolichnaya, has absolutely no influence on the Russian policy, on the Russian president, on the Russian parliament, and they cannot go to the Russian authorities and say, look, I mean, we are losing money and could you please change your policy? They will say, go to hell. I mean, we don't care about you or your company. So I think if you really want to boycott someone, you should boycott, first of all, state companies in Russia, which belong to the state and which have the stake of the government. And definitely we should directly challenge the Russian politicians, the members of the State Duma, who are behind all these homophobic initiatives, especially the ban on propaganda of homosexuality. And these, for example, people, we created a petition on the site of the White House asking for their inclusion in the Magnitsky list, which is for the ban on entrance to the United States, for the visa ban. And if this petition collects 100,000 signatures, then I think we will have a lot of coverage both in Russia and abroad on this matter. And I think it will really have a lot of discussions in the Russian media, and many Russian politicians will think twice or even 10 times before voting for similar initiatives in the future, because they know that they might be cut from all their interests in the West, where they are having holidays, where they have their children studying, where they have their financial and economic interests. And I think that will target them directly. But to target a commercial company which has no influence on the government is a little bit strange.
There are horrific reports that Russian neo-Nazis are using social networks to lure gay teens to remote locations where they are beaten and even tortured.
It's once again all these homophobic laws which were actively promoted on the federal level and on the regional levels recently in the last year, they gave homophobes the carte blanche, the way to do what they want without any accountability, without any punishment. And I think that, of course, the creation of these groups, like catching the people under the logo of fighting pedophilia or under any other slogans, it just gave them the chance to do it, because they know that now to be gay is not to be a human in Russia. So that's why they know that even if they're caught and even if they're sentenced, they will get a much less harsh sentence than they would get for disturbing someone else, not an LGBT person. So I think that it's not strange and not very surprising that such groups appear now on the wave of this homophobic hysteria in the Russian society and in the Russian power.
Recently, Russian police jailed four Dutch tourists under the gay propaganda law. So how can they continue to claim that the law will not impact foreign visitors during the Olympics?
That was a very big mistake. I think that probably it was done locally and without any, of course, coordination with the federal authorities. They arrested them after that, obviously. There was a media attention to it, and they allowed them to leave the country, and after that they put a ban on their further entering the country. They were not really charged for propaganda of homosexuality. They were arrested, suspected of breaching this law, but as of now there is no conviction on this. And I think that they just showed the whole world that they are ready to apply this law to anyone, including those people who will come to participate in the Olympic Games. They're continuing to firmly insist on the fact that these laws has credibility and that they will be used during the Olympic Games in case someone breaches the law. And that's why the international community should be very, very careful in the way they will deal with the Russian authorities, in the way they get the assurances from the Russian authorities, because these assurances, they don't cost anything. It's just words. They cannot suspend the validity of the law during the Olympic Games, because for that you need a decision of parliament. There will be no decision of parliament on that, and no president nor the government has the right to suspend the law in the particular time and in the particular place. That's why all this is just trying to brainwash the international community, the International Olympic Committee, and in reality, these laws will be enforced, and they can be really applied to the people who will express themselves publicly during the Olympic Games in favor of LGBT rights. That's why the International Olympic Committee should do everything in the cooperation with the authorities of the countries which are participating in these games to make sure that this homophobic law is being condemned by a unified front, and that the Russians feel that they have to do something about them.
Nikolai, what human rights violations have been the most egregious?
Russia is breaching human rights of everyone every day. Gay issue is just one of them. And there are very strict regulations now on freedom of expression, on freedom of assembly, on freedom to register NGOs. The NGOs are being forced to register as foreign agents if they get any funding from abroad, from other countries. If you don't do this, you are facing a very high fines for that. You cannot really express yourself publicly. It's a very restrictive law which punishes people who didn't get the permission to demonstrate. In this case, they have to pay huge fines for that and can even go to jail. And there is no free media, apart from some internet media. There are no free courts who can give a fair sentence. There is no free elections. Everything is being rigged in favor of one particular party. So you can guess. I mean, the gay issue is just one of them, but it's now being very actively discussed in the media because of this barbarian law which they passed on gay propaganda. But in general, the situation is deteriorating on all the fronts.
Nikolai, thanks for talking with us.
Yes, you're welcome.
This has been a Skype conversation with Russian LGBT activist Nikolai Alexeyev. I'm Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Pamela Brooks, Charlie Bauer, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Thanks also to Dorian Marina and Free Speech Radio News. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Ivana Foundation, the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, and our generous listeners for their financial support. You'll find more about us at thiswayout.org, including newswrap transcripts, special CD offers, and links to our podcasts, blog, and Facebook page. Follow TWO Radio on Twitter, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WGOT Gainesville, Florida, KLAI Fort Bragg, Laytonville, Willits, California, 5GFM Kadena, South Australia, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. And we're all gonna stay tuned.